is about. There's something evolving. Whatever may come, the world keeps revolving. They say the next big thing is here, that the revolution's near. But to me it seems quite clear that it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
And welcome back to hour two of our nightly get-together here on Air America Radio. I am Nicole Sandler, and we will get back to Leonard Peltier. I have a really cool little piece to end the show with tonight, but we are going to change focus now for the next few segments anyway. You didn't think I'd go through a night without dealing with healthcare now, did you? Come on. All right, the whole dealing with the Leonard Peltier story came at the suggestion of a listener, as did our next guest. I got an email. And I always ask you, if you think there's a guest I should interview or a topic we should cover, please let me know. I do take requests. You can find me again online. My blog and my podcast page is radioornot.com. All my contact information is there. Through there, you can befriend me on Facebook and follow me on Twitter and all that stuff and make your suggestions, as was the case with Brent Badowski. Now, I wasn't really familiar with who Brent Badowski was until the last few years, and I would hear him. He was a frequent guest with Randy Rhodes, and I always thought he was fascinating. And what I didn't realize was what a Washington insider he was. From the mid-70s through 1990, Brent Badowski served in senior congressional staff positions, including legislative assistant to former U.S. Senator Lloyd Bentsen and others. And he left politics for a little while, but reengaged after 9/11. He informally advises people in power, let's put it that way, and he knows the people in power. So I reached out to him over the last few days. We've been playing phone tag, and we decided to wait until late today to talk to find out how the whole healthcare situation was shaking out. We've been emailing back and forth for the last few days, and when we first touched base, you were very discouraged, not very optimistic about the future of healthcare reform. Has that changed at all?
Yeah, I'm feeling a little bit better, and let me explain what's happened this week. Where we were at the beginning of the week, first of all, was that the Senate was about to do something that would be passed out of the Finance Committee this week that would have killed the public option, and it would have killed any kind of a mandate, and it would involve what I consider to be a bogus deal with Republicans. That's where the Senate was. Where the House was early to midweek was a deal with the Blue Dog Democrats that would have dramatically watered down but kept some of the public option, but had all kinds of punishments for poor folks and gifts for the insurance and drug industries. That's where we were Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. What has happened since then is that, to their great credit, and I've been privately urging liberals to do this, a lot of liberal members in the House in particular started simply saying, we're not going to vote for a bill if it's a bad bill. We're not going to vote for a bill if it has no public option that's viable. Mm-hmm. And what happened at that point was, instead of just negotiating with a handful of Republicans in the Senate and the most conservative Democrats in the House, which would only yield a bad product, the leadership and the Energy and Commerce Committee and the President had to start thinking about keeping the liberals on board, could not take them for granted anymore, and that moved the whole boundaries of the debate somewhat towards the left, to use that phrase.
Okay.
And so it's really been, in the course of the week, we went from being two touchdowns down when we first started talking earlier in the week. Now I'd say we're one touchdown down, but we're moving the ball forward to score another one, and it's going to be an ugly fight, but we're back in business.
Okay, well, that is good news. And I got an inkling of that yesterday after there was a big single-payer rally in Washington, D.C., and that's when I first caught wind of this letter that I guess 57 members of the Progressive Caucus had signed and said, if we do not have a robust public option, you don't have us anymore. So, as you said, maybe that brought the fight back a little bit where, all right, the liberal gang is a force to be reckoned with now.
Absolutely, and I think one of the problems that I worked for the House Democratic leadership. I was an early supporter of Barack Obama back in 2007. I was part of that group with Tom Daschle of Insider Democrats supporting Obama early. But one of the problems that progressives sometimes have, and I think Obama has fallen a victim to this, and at times the leadership of Congress, is they take liberals for granted. They say, well, we're going to have them because they have nowhere else to go. So what they do is they start negotiating to the right and then to the right of that and to the right of that. What happened when the members of the Progressive Caucus spoke out, and privately I've urged every Democrat I could find, names you know, all over the audience tonight, to do that, okay, is it moved the discussion back towards the center left and towards a health care plan that actually had some integrity. If there is no public option, there is no bill worth passing, in my opinion, period.
Mine either.
Then, you know, mm-hmm. what you're left with, absent a public option. And that's where the Senate was earlier in the week. Absent a public option, you've just got a disguised windfall for the insurance business, period. And we need to fight that, and we need to draw that line, and we need to make that clear. And in terms of public opinion, when Democrats do make that clear, and if the president joins and really makes that kind of a case now, I think public opinion will turn in our favor, but only if we make the fight, which we haven't always done.
Right. Brent Podolsky with us here on Air America Radio. All right. Now, the Senate still, they haven't come out with one bill as the House did. With the House, we have H.R. 3200, and three committees had it for markup. And the one remaining committee was Energy and Commerce, which I guess there was some kind of deal struck there today. Anthony Weiner is still supposed to offer up an amendment to substitute the whole bill for the single-payer bill for basically H.R. 676. But what I read just moments ago is something that Henry Waxman agreed, or Nancy Pelosi agreed, that they would put forth a vote for the whole House on a single-payer bill.
Yeah. But let me explain, without putting everybody to sleep, the details technically of what's going on. Today on the House side, there were essentially two agreements on the House committee. The first agreement, which in my view is far more important, is an agreement between the liberals on the committee and the blue dogs that would strengthen the public option and strengthen the help to poor folks under the health plan. And that is an agreement based on the pending bill that will more or less become law in one way or another. So it's between the liberals, the blue dogs, the conservatives, and the House leadership. And what it does is it will strengthen the public option compared to where we were yesterday, and it will strengthen the subsidies and assistance to poor folks and working folks and the unemployed who can't afford to pay the premiums. That's number one. That's an enormous and important step forward. The second agreement that's been breaking over the last hour or two, which I counsel people to be cautious about, and I will explain what's going on, that there appears to be an agreement that on the floor of the House and in the committee, there will be an up or down vote on the single payer plan per se. Now, I favor single payer personally, completely. I would go much further than anybody's going. In fact, I come pretty close personally to supporting a national health insurance plan. I'm where Kennedy has always been on this.
Mm-hmm.
The danger of a vote on the single payer, because everyone in the audience is going to be getting emails and hearing about this, and they're going to think it's good, and on a certain level, it is good. The danger is that what moderate and weak liberals will do, and follow me on this, because this happens 1,000 times,
okay,
is they will say, I'm going to vote for the single payer. The single payer will then lose, okay? And then they'll sell out to the insurance industry on amendments to the bill that will pass and think they can go back to liberals and say, but I tried my best on single payer. So the important message here for people to get out is to say, if you're for single payer, say vote for the amendment, vote for single payer on the floor of the House. But if it doesn't pass, vote for the public option, vote against the insurance industry, and we still will not support a bill that is not satisfactory on the key issues such as the public option. The danger of the single payer vote, the way that the manipulative and devious forces in Congress sometimes work, is if it's not handled right, it could give an excuse to weak liberals and weak moderates and some weak moderate conservatives who will vote for single payer only because they know it won't pass. Then they'll tell liberals they were good on it, and then when nobody's looking, they'll sell out on what will pass. So the message has to be, if you want to vote for single payer, great, and do it. But if single payer doesn't pass, you better be with us on the important stuff on whatever does pass. That a bill must have a strong public option, strong coverage and universal coverage, strong assistance to those who don't have the money to pay the premiums so we can get those folks on the program. And if you don't have that in the bill, we're going to vote no on the bill, whatever happens on everything else.
Right. Okay. And that all makes sense. Brent Podolsky with us here. Now, let me ask you about another single-payer amendment that passed this week. It's on the, I think it was the Education and Labor Committee that Dennis Kucinich introduced, and it was a single-payer states' rights option. Do you think there's any chance that will make it into the final bill?
Well, if it is to give a state the option to do it, there might be a way that it can be put into the bill. Now, the thing to remember, though, is our states are going bankrupt. Look at poor California out there. And all over the country, states right now are in very big trouble because of the national economy and related factors. And so I think it's a good idea. But the thing to remember is states don't have much money to do much of anything right now. So that's good to give an option. I'm in favor of all options. I mean, let Kucinich have the option for the states to do single payer. Let the states have the option to do the cooperative. Let everybody have the option at the state and national level that is always going to be there for the public health plan, the Medicare type of program, because that is what polices all the other options. That the market is so corrupted, quite frankly, that what you have to do is to have a government option. And by a government option, we'll have the leverage of the numbers and the government to keep prices down. That will force the cooperatives. That will force the private insurance companies. That will force everybody else to have to lower their prices to compete. That's the key. The reason the insurance industry wants to kill the public option is without that option, you're just back in an oligopoly situation where the insurance companies will be able to manipulate prices higher.
Well, of course.
So for the most number of options all across the board, the key is there must be a public option that represents the people and not the insurance companies.
Amen, brother. That is Brent Podowsky. We'll take a break right now and come back with more words of wisdom. Ah, this man is smart, huh? I'm Nicole Sandler. Stay put. We'll be right back.
Nicole Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler on Air America Radio. Listening to Nicole Sandler on Air America Radio.
All right, and let's get back to my conversation with Brent Podowsky. I know you're a big proponent of working together in a bipartisan way, but what we're seeing from the people on the right is not much cooperation. It seems like they have become the party of no. They're just obstructionists. They're not offering up better plans, a way to make the system better. They're just trying to block any kind of reform that the Democrats are putting forth. Do you think that President Obama is acting in the right way, trying to get bipartisan support for any of these reforms?
On issue by issue, there are more areas in some places for bipartisanship than in other areas. On health care, in my opinion, there is very little room for broad bipartisanship. Because the Republican Party has gone so far to the right that there are very few people to negotiate with. That's why I'm against what they're calling bipartisanship in the Senate Finance Committee. I mean, you've got three Republicans in there and three Democrats, but what they're coming out with doesn't have a public option.
Mm-hmm.
Well, wouldn't until the last couple of days. Now they're getting scared and they didn't pass it out of the committee, which is good for the world, okay? But I'm not in favor of bipartisanship. That means surrender. And on the issue of health care, I don't know how broad a bipartisanship you can get. What I've been advocating on health care is that we go to Democrats. If there's anybody out there that knows anybody in Nebraska, write to Senator Ben Nelson and say he should make a public pledge to not filibuster against the Democratic health care plan. If there's anybody in Louisiana or in Arkansas, other states where there are some senators who haven't ruled it out, what we need to do is to get every one of the Democrats in the Senate to say, we will not filibuster a Democratic program on health care. If we say that, we got 60 votes.
Mm-hmm.
Then you can negotiate with anybody that can be reasonable, and you don't have to sell your soul to the devil to get from 59 to 60. So where I'm on bipartisanship on the health care, I'm very bearish and I'm very hostile to anything that goes beyond a good faith negotiation. I mean, it is not bipartisanship to sit there with some Republicans in the Senate, God bless them, okay, and say no public option. No, I'm against that, totally. I'm against any discussion that does not include a public option. I'm against any discussion that does not include a very close to universal care for everybody. Mm-hmm. I'm against any option that says, in the end, that the insurance companies will be driving the show. I don't believe on health care that you can have very much bipartisanship. You may be able to get Olympia Snow from Maine and one or two others, and we should try. But when you're talking about the Maine Republicans, these are guys that won't even admit that Barack Obama was born in the USA.
What and what the hell is that about? What? How can? I mean, did you see the reports coming? I think it was someone from Fire Dog Lake was following around members of Congress trying to just get them to answer the question, was Barack Obama born in Hawaii? Is he a U.S. citizen? And many of them ran from him.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. It was pretty funny, actually. Some guy running up the Capitol. He wouldn't give an answer to the question. Now, the problem with the Republican Party is that it has gone so far to the right that we're dealing almost with extremism. I mean, I put a piece, I'm going to say something I don't like to say, is that Fox ought to fire Glenn Beck.
Yeah.
Okay? And I don't like to say it because it's too easy to say that to liberals. I don't like taking the easy shot. Okay? But and I wrote a piece, if you go to thehill.com and look at the pundit blog, you'll see me being attacked by all the right wing. You gotta love this. But Fox ought to fire Glenn Beck because he went on and he said, the president of the United States hates white people.
Yep.
Okay. Now, there are all kinds of people I disagree with on Fox, on the Republican side, every now and then a Democrat. But when you say that the president of the United States hates white people, that is a disease of the mind. That is what the American Nazi Party says about Democrats. And that shouldn't be on Fox. That shouldn't be anywhere.
I agree with you, but you have somebody like Rush Limbaugh, who has probably even a bigger audience than Glenn Beck on the radio, saying the same kinds of things.
Yeah.
And no one's holding him accountable.
Well, that's the problem. And I think, you know, I told some of the Republicans who were attacking me tonight on that Hill post I just said, you know, this is no longer Bush and Cheney, where you can lie about Democrats and they're going to take it sitting down. You attack us, we're going to attack you. We're going to hit back, and we're going to hit back harder, and we're going to win, because at our worst, we are more close to mainstream America than those guys are at their best. That on the Republican side, there is a disease of the extreme right that these people are so afraid of, even moderate Republicans in, you know, in the Senate. Now, I will give credit to two Republicans right now. I don't normally do. Lindsey Graham.
Okay, we're going to break here and be back with more Brent Podawski in a moment on Air America Radio.
Nicole Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler on Air America Radio.
All right. Sorry about the timing. I got so entranced in the interview with Brent Podawski, I wasn't watching the clock. You can read some of his work at The Hill, pundits.thehill.com, and you'll find Brent Podawski's musings, and we'll continue our conversation on Air America Radio right now.
Now, I will give credit to two Republicans right now. I don't normally do. Lindsey Graham of South Carolina. And Alexander from Tennessee, they're going to vote for Sotomayor.
Right.
And I give them credit for that. I think we got to be fair about that.
But they should vote for her.
30 to 40 Republicans that won't.
Which it makes no sense. I mean, first of all, she was first appointed to the federal bench by George H.W. Bush. She's pretty damn conservative, where actually I would have liked to have seen President Obama's first appointment to the Supreme Court be someone a little bit more liberal.
Yeah. And I don't know how a party, like in this case the Republicans, can have probably two-thirds to three-fourths or even more of their members oppose her. So I'll give credit to the small number of Republicans, and those two are moderate conservatives, Alexander and Graham. But the problem that they have is even bigger. You look at Lou Dobbs railing on the air. You know, he has to compete with Fox. He's going off the deep end to the right and further to the right and further to the right.
And I think CNN should fire him.
I mean, it's appalling that he can't make a declarative sentence about where the president was born. But the fact is, and the problem is, and this is why I don't think we're going to get bipartisanship on health care, and I don't think we should try, is that they've lost so many moderates out of the Republican Party. Maybe the Democrats won all those seats, that there's nobody really to negotiate with. I mean, Olympia Snow, one can negotiate with. Okay. But when you get, much to the right of her, there is no plan that would make any sense to us that they would ever support. And when they're sitting there in the Senate Finance Committee, controlled by Democrats, in a Democratic Senate with 60 Democrats, they should not be having one word of discussion on any plan that eliminates a public option, period, end of discussion.
Brent Podowsky, let me ask you this, because you are privy. You know the rules and how things work in Congress. How, you know, I listen to my Schoolhouse Rock CDs. You know, I'm just a bill, just, you know, only a bill. But it doesn't address the whole filibuster issue. And I'm confused on this, so hopefully you can straighten us out. They need 60 votes for cloture to end debate on a bill. So that's where the 60 votes comes in to get something passed. If they get 60 votes for cloture, then they have a vote on the bill itself, then they only need a simple majority to pass it?
Right. That's the ball game. And what has happened, mostly with the Republicans filibustering everything over the last 3 or 4 years, what's happened is, you know, when God created the earth, a majority of 100 was 50 plus 1. In the Senate, a majority of 100 has become 60.
Yeah.
And it's becoming 60 on everything that matters to anybody. Now, again, the point I made earlier, if anybody out there is from Nebraska, or check with whatever the senator you have, Democratic senators ought to make a public pledge on the record now that they will not filibuster a Democratic health care bill.
Why can't Harry Reid get them to make that pledge? And say, you don't have to vote for the final bill. We'll talk about that later. Just pledge to vote for cloture.
Yeah, that's what I'm arguing. And without saying what I may have said to the majority leader privately, I think it serves a valid function for people listening to the show to contact their senators on the Democratic side and say, take the public pledge not to filibuster. The ones that really need to hear it the most right now are Arkansas and Louisiana, and above all, Ben Nelson in Nebraska. I mean,
right. It's
okay to vote no, Ben, okay? But it's not okay to filibuster with 40 Republicans to kill a Democratic proposal.
Exactly.
Not now, not on this issue. It's too important.
Okay, now let me ask, now what is reconciliation? What am I hearing about 10 years, that they're going to have to revisit this in 10 years if they don't get 60 votes?
Well, on reconciliation, it can be done by a majority vote. And you can go to a different procedure, that a reconciliation bill is a budget reconciliation, okay? And it theoretically can be done by a majority without a filibuster. It would put everybody in the audience to sleep within 5 minutes if I went much further. Except what I'll tell you is, it's okay to do that if there's no other option. But you have to pay for everything down to the penny. You have limitations on what you can include in reconciliation. It is a very cumbersome and burdensome way to do it. Now, I'm not against that if it's the only way to get it through. But it's hard, it's technical, it distorts everything because it wasn't meant to be done that. The much easier way is to say to Ben Nelson, Senator Nelson, you're a Democrat. You want to vote no, vote no. You want to vote for amendments, okay? You want to go to a party with Republicans and say they're all wonderful, go to the party and say they're wonderful. But tell us now, today, you will not filibuster as a Democratic senator the bill of a Democratic president when the people trying to defeat it, guys like Senator DeMint, are saying very publicly they want to break the Democratic president. They want to have the Waterloo.
Right.
No Democrat should be a party to that. And everyone in the audience should tell any senator that they can pick up the phone and call, and especially those that I mentioned, and especially Nebraska, that you want to make a public statement right now that you're not going to filibuster. Now, if enough pressure is put on, I think they will. There are limits as to, I'm being diplomatic, as to what Harry Reid can say, because he is a member of his caucus. I'm sure Reid is advising him to do something similar. But it really ought to be voters in Nebraska and in other states say, you know, that we have a Democratic president. He was elected with a Democratic mandate. It was crystal clear in the campaign what we were going to do on health care. It's okay to vote no. Vote your conscience. But don't join obstructionist Republicans trying to destroy a Democratic president. Don't join obstructionist Republicans who are acting like the old segregationists from the South who filibustered civil rights.
That's great advice. And you addressed Harry Reid. Is he as spineless and wimpy as he appears to be to me and most of my listeners?
No, I think Harry Reid is very good. And I'm a friend of his. I talk to him or write things to him fairly often. I really can't say too much on the air about what I might say to him privately.
Mm-hmm.
But what I will say is this, and I love Ed Schultz. I think Ed's done the best job on health care. But he got Harry Reid wrong on this thing. When Reid pulled the bill and said, we're not going to do anything before the recess, he saved us, and he saved the Senate from a bill that would have killed the public option. What he did helped us.
Okay.
Because had the Senate gone any further, okay, what would have happened is they would have put on the committee and on the floor before the recess a bill that would have had no public option, and it would have been a nightmare. So Harry Reid saved us from that. Okay, it would have been, you know, the pits of hell for us. And you know, when I was pessimistic a week ago, now I'm in the middle, okay, of optimism and pessimism. It would have been a disaster if we voted on the floor then where we were then. I mean, even today, you know, we're sitting here right now tonight, okay? And as we sit here tonight, the Senate pending proposal on the Finance Committee is to kill the public option and to kill the mandate. It's unbelievable.
It is unbelievable. So we have our work cut out for us. During this August recess, we've got to be on the phone to our senators and even to senators who aren't necessarily ours, and demand a public option, demand the reform that, you know, that we voted for in November.
No, absolutely. And we got to put it in very strong terms. I was had lunch today in the members' dining room in the House of Representatives. And you should have seen me buttonholing people on the House side about this today. We got to be clear, and we got to be strong, and we got to be active. And right now we are a touchdown down. If it were done today, we'd lose by a little. But there's been better movement later in the week. But this is an issue where everybody in the audience, everybody that hears this, everybody you know, everybody who can write a congressman or a senator or make a call or send an email or go to a public meeting, we can make a difference now. This is the battle of our lifetime. It's 16%, 18%, 20% of the American economy. We're up against people trying to buy Congress with campaign money. But people matter. And if we keep the heat on the Democrats to do what Democrats do, we win. It won't be easy, and we may not win, but it's winnable. And this is one of those moments, and, you know, I haven't been on this show before. I don't say this every time. Every single person in the audience tonight can change history. It matters what people do right now. It really does matter. Believe me, I'm in the middle of this fight, getting my butt kicked every day. But we've made progress when liberals stood up and said they won't vote for a bad bill. That made progress that really changed the dynamic here. And applaud those guys that do it, if they're your senators or your congressmen.
Yeah, you got to thank them. Now, well, they're coming home. The House adjourns tonight, right? And the Senate next week. And then they go back to their district. And many of them will be having town hall meetings. And you can call and say, I want to come in and have a few minutes. That's the time to do it. And get them on when they're on their home turf, when they're on your turf, and make your voices heard.
Oh, yeah. And if somebody's from a state where they got a Blue Dog Democrat and they supported that Blue Dog Democrat, go to a town meeting and or call and ask for an appointment with him or her and say, look, I was with you last time and I want to be with you next time, but I need your help on a public option, Blue Dogs.
Right.
Be polite, be friendly, love them, kiss them, hug them, but make it clear, you know, you got to earn my vote and you can't take me for granted.
Yes. All right, Brent Podowsky, now let me ask you this, because this is the, you know, the 800-pound gorilla in the room. The reason that all these blue dogs and all these conservatives and the Republicans are so against health care reform and getting rid of these for-profit insurance companies, getting rid of the government-sanctioned extortion, is how I refer to them, is because they're the ones giving them the most campaign contributions. I think that nothing is really going to change on a major level until we have real campaign finance reform. Is that ever going to happen?
Not anytime soon, I'm afraid to say. But there is the power. You're absolutely right. There is the power of persuasion and truth and getting the information out. There was a piece in the Washington Post today. People can look it up about how the Blue Dog Democrats are getting inundated with insurance company money. And the problem with Washington right now is that it is an ocean of special interest money that goes to Democrats as well as Republicans. They're buying and selling legislation left and right. You look at what's happening with the banks, and even Democrats are allowing credit card companies to raise our rates for another 9 months and to impose fees. And Wall Street Pay is still what it is. And look at these bills. They're not doing what they're saying they're doing. The city is far too bought and paid for, and we don't have as many people up there who will stand up to that. If I could have one reform now, it would be public finance. The reason it would be good is the reason it ain't going to pass anytime soon, because even Democrats take the bad money.
Yep.
What we have in response to money is us.
Is us. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And our votes. And at the end of the day, they can have all the special interest money in the world, but if they don't get our votes, guess what? They don't have a job on Capitol Hill anymore.
Exactly. And so people out there can make a big difference. This is one we can win. It ain't going to be easy, but it really matters when people stand up at that meeting or ask for a member to call them on the phone, their congressman, their senator. Public option, yes. Mandate, yes. You don't put it in, bad bill, vote no.
That's right. Brent Podolsky, it is a pleasure to speak with you finally. And as I said, I've been a fan of you for a long time. I read your blogs on the Hills Pundit blog. I will link to it from my blog at RadioOrNot.com and my page at AirAmerica.com. And we're going to fight the good fight here, and I hope we can talk again soon.
My pleasure. We got a shot.
What an interesting, fascinating guy, Brent Podolsky, here on Air America Radio. I do have a link to his blog at The Hill. It's pundits.thehill.com. And, again, the link is on my blog at RadioOrNot.com and on the Nicole Sandler Show page at AirAmerica.com as well. All right, let's take a break, come back for one final segment, and then we'll stick a fork in the week and the month. Wow, August. Well, I guess we're already into August. It's here on the East Coast anyway. All right, stand by. Nicole Sandler, I'll be right back.
Nicole Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler.